Take your Bible and turn to 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2. And I'm going to cut into Paul's ongoing letter to Timothy at verse number 8. And just kind of remind you that we've had a theme for Timothy, and it's been kind of broad in that it's a transmission. How do we transmit? How do we kind of carry on this message, this good news to the next, we could say the next person, we could say the next generation, we could say the next group of people that we encounter? And those are always questions that we have, and that's really what Paul is doing. He's kind of handing on or passing off. He's probably nearing the end of his life. He's in prison. It's possible that he gets out and he moves on towards Spain. That's one of the possibilities. It's also possible that after this letter and his time in prison that he dies. And so he knows he's nearing the end, and he's kind of making some arrangements. Timothy's been, remember, really special. He's been important to him, been pretty close young man, and he's trying to encourage him and tell him, you've got what it takes. Remember, Timothy didn't have necessarily the same constitution, maybe not as courageous at the moment as Paul was. And so it's like, come on, you can do this, Timothy. And so he keeps encouraging him, beginning in verse number 8. Keep in mind Jesus Christ, risen from the dead, descended from David, according to my gospel. For this I suffer to the point of being bound like a criminal, but God's message is not bound. This is why I endure all things for the elect, so that they also may obtain salvation which is in Christ Jesus with eternal glory. This saying is trustworthy. For if we have died with Him, we will also live with Him. If we endure, we will also reign with Him. If we deny Him, He will also deny us. If we are faithless, He remains faithful, for He cannot deny Himself. Remind them of these things, charging them before God not to fight about words. This is in no way profitable and leads to the ruin of the hearers. Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, correctly teaching the word of truth. There was a fellow, and his name was Leonard, and Leonard had anterior grade amnesia. And anterior grade amnesia is the condition in which you lose that short-term memory after about 15 minutes. And he had experienced a tragedy in his life. He had lost his wife in a traumatic way, and she was gone. And he was desperate to try to piece together all of the details. What happened? What were the events? With his issues with his memory, when he would learn something, if he didn't find some way to record it, it would be gone. So as he's kind of performing this investigation, he's moving about, and every time he learns something, the first few times he realizes it's going to be a very difficult process if he doesn't find a way to record what he learns, because in 15 minutes or so, it'll be gone. Would be to write it on his skin, something like a tattoo, if you will. So every time he learns something, a detail related to what happened to his wife, he would mark it. And pretty soon he was covered with those memories of what happened. How many of you saw Memento about 16 years ago? It's a movie, and it's somewhat fictional, but it communicates in a very real way what Paul is doing when he says, keep in mind. See, the problem for most of us, as we were mentioning with the children, isn't that we forget as much. It's that we've got so much to remember that we don't keep those things that are most important right on top. And so I don't know about you, but if you happen to venture into my office, one of those two places, you could go, how do you get anything done? It's just messy. I love the articles that come out and say a messy desk is an indication of a clean mind or whatever that, however they put it, or smart mind or sharp mind. Well, I don't know what, but I just like the fact that it means something good. And so, you know, intentionally we scatter things on the desk. Just that way when you come in, you say, oh yeah, he's one of those that keeps his desk messy. You know? But really what happens is if you put things and you know where they are, the things that are most important, you always pull out and put on top. So that the next day when you come in and you've got something going, if you take those and you shuffle that paper in, and you say, oh, tomorrow here's where I'm going to start, I'm going to put those things on top. And so you've got a discipline that says, I'm going to keep in mind the things that are important. And so a lot of times when we are comparing our spiritual condition or situation with those who we read about in the Scriptures, we'll run across the accusation or the description of Israel that, and they forgot. And really what that meant was is that they had songwriters and historians who were recording so that they could report, remember all the things that God has done. It was Psalm 66 that we read to start it. And remember, I don't know if you picked it up, but one of the lines in Psalm 66 in those first 11 verses was a reference to crossing the Red Sea when they escaped Egypt. It was wired into their lyrics. And most often in their psalm lyrics, which that's what psalms are, they're songs. And so when you read them, you could sing them if you wanted to put a melody to them, and people have over time. And that was what they sung to one another. And in their singing, they would recall this event. And it was keeping that event on their mind. And if you read through the Psalms, you discover that there are some prominent themes that always are on display. And the Exodus is one of those that seems to often show up in the retelling of the story by the historians and by the songwriters, the lyricists in the Psalms. It was a monumental moment for them. And so the songwriters want to keep it on their mind. Keep it in mind. Lots of things have happened, but I'm going to tell you, you probably won't find a hymn or lyric in the Psalms related to Elijah and the prophets of Baal. Now, if you ask me, that's a pretty fantastic story, right? You remember that story? You know, one prophet, and he was standing against this godless regime, Ahab and Jezebel, and so it was pitting these pagans who felt like that they could conjure God's activity by screaming and chanting and wailing and cutting themselves. And remember the story? They spent all day long and they yet couldn't make it rain. Or actually, they couldn't make fire fall on this altar. And so finally, after they wore themselves out, screaming and chanting and dancing and cutting themselves to try to get firefall from heaven to burn the animal that's on the altar, Elijah simply said this prayer, and very simple, short prayer, asked God for the fire to fall, and man, fire fell from heaven, consumed that animal that had been doused in water, sapped up all the water in the moat around the altar, and it just clearly was this demonstration that God that they served was the God that everyone ought to be paying attention to. Now, you would think that a story like that, a made-for-TV story, don't you think? Can you imagine the cinematography for that sort of event? You'd think that a story like that might capture the imagination of the lyricist who wrote the Psalms. No. It might be swept up in the catchphrase, mighty deeds, but the singular event is not referenced. But the Exodus is referenced over and over and over again. Because what happened in God liberating His people in captivity is a theme that plays all the way to Jesus. And so in order to keep things on their minds, keep them in mind, the songwriters and the historians were always trying to raise up that story so that no matter what happened, what events they experienced along the way, no matter what they were, they always were called to remember that thing, that event, that story. That's really what Paul is doing when he says to Timothy, keep in mind. Now, if you can imagine a young fella, and maybe you'd have to work at it, but if you could imagine a young fella who's given charge in a metropolitan city of pastoring the church there, and maybe being kind of a leader over even some of the house churches in Ephesus, huge city, sprawling city, very religious city, very economically diverse city, also a city full of poverty, not like any other metropolitan area in the United States. And so he's got lots to remember and lots to get on his mind. Paul has talked about how he ought to maybe organize his church for leadership, all the qualifications that they may ought to think about, what kind of people ought to be leaders. For instance, they shouldn't be people who are prone to fight. Some of these things are really important nowadays. And I think that he's trying to get in mind all of these things that he's got to remember. And Paul gets his second letter and he says, listen, keep Jesus in mind. Now, let me ask you, doesn't that sound obvious? Didn't it? I mean, he's going to be a pastor. He's going to be teaching the word of truth is the last phrase, which is really a euphemism, which means it's a statement that fills in for another statement. So in the first part, he talks about his gospel, and the word of truth is the bookend. So you've got the gospel's about Jesus, and the word of truth is about Jesus. So Paul's bookending everything about Jesus. And so don't you think that it seems like an obvious thing that of all the things Timothy might not forget, that he might keep up top as he's thinking about all to do, it'd be Jesus? Seems obvious, yes? Now let me ask you a question. Because all these, you know, are traps. If I can get you to say yes, it's a trap. See, so if we are laying claim that we trust Jesus and we're following and we want to be faithful, then isn't it obvious that you and I should remember Jesus? But sometimes, don't we have to keep him in mind? We've got lots to remember, lots go on, and it's really easy that in the chores of daily life and in the responsibilities of work and family, it's really easy that pretty soon that thing that's obvious kind of gets pressed down. It kind of gets put out. So here's what happens. When we face certain moments of decision, if we've not kept Jesus in mind, then when it comes to informing what kind of decision we ought to make, something else will be informing our minds. You with me? So you see, if I'm stressed because I'm so busy, then here's what will influence me. All of those activities that have got me stressed, and I'm thinking, how am I going to get it all done? I got to get one of the children here and one of them here, and my husband's going to be home here, and we're going to try to have dinner there, and I just don't know how we're going to get it all done. And then the phone rings, and someone says, hey, you know what? You forgot you were going to help me take care of fill in the blank. And immediately, you have a rupture. I can't believe you called me. Do you know how busy my life is? Do you know that I've got to go to this game and I've got to make that game? I can't be two places in once. And I'll tell you what, my husband, they're working him overtime. He just comes home late every day. And how are we going to eat? I'm so worried about him. And in that flying off in the handle at someone who you'd already committed to help, you sound an awful lot like Jesus, don't you? See how easy it is to forget? That's what happens. So what happens to us is as those things are pressed down, that is our remembering or keeping Jesus in mind, or his model, or his way, or his pattern, or his life, it gets pushed down, all the easier it is for us to be informed by something else. And if you don't think for one minute that Timothy is a pastor, or any pastor today, doesn't face that particular sort of struggle of keeping those things in mind when there are all these things to remember and make sure they get done and taken care of, then you're just probably not living in the real world. You're living in this ideal world that we always remember. So when, just this morning, when I arrive, I unlock a few doors that the guys who are setting up haven't unlocked. And they go around and make sure your air conditioners are right where they need to be. If you're too cold, don't complain. If you're too hot, don't complain. Otherwise, I'll give you a key and you can be here at 8. Right? You with me? But sometimes I'll find an air conditioner's been on. Someone's been in the building. Not intentional. But that costs money. Or if an air conditioner's on, a fan's been turned on because someone's hot in the room and they don't want the AC running, but they want a breeze in the room. And it's running. That costs money. I got to think about those things. I'm sitting here trying to think about 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse number 8 and following. And I got to make sure, listen, that's going to show up as an expense. Right. Time to get through tonight. We're going to have sandwiches and a pie contest. I hope somebody bring a chocolate pie. Hint, hint. Lemon meringue would be wonderful. Any kind of pie you want to bring that doesn't have coconut in, I'll probably eat it. Yeah? Yeah. And when it's all done, we will be making sure that all the tables are put up and the van building's closed. And hopefully you'll have already gone home, take the kids, put them to bed, so they'll be ready for school tomorrow. But those are things we're already thinking about. And so we're trying to think about this 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse number 8, all the way to 15. And how do we open up that as good news and gospel? Well, you see, there are lots of things that go on. And I'm just talking about from my perspective. But listen, we could have a conversation. I could invite you up on a stool and we could kind of have an interview. And you could tell me all the things in your life that you're juggling. And I'll probably look at you and go, how do you do it all? How do you get anything done? And then you're going to say, yeah, but you know what? I blew it at work. Yeah, because like you're having trouble keeping Jesus in mind. It's like that's our struggle. That's all of our struggle, isn't it? Hey, listen, this isn't a word to invite you to church to say, let's see if the preacher can't find fault with you this morning. Listen, this is my life as well. We really wrestle with how do we keep the things that are important in mind? Because there's so many. I mean, I haven't even begun to talk about the election. The world is stressed by this thing. Goodness for November 9th, right? I mean, when November 9th comes, I think there's going to be this collective exhale. No matter who gets elected. We're so weary and tired of all of that. It's just, oh my, when is it going to be over? And that's all everybody wants to talk about. I'd be glad to move on to the next thing, right? How do you keep that in mind? Well, Paul says you start with Jesus and you end with Jesus, and you don't ever forget that though we may be bound up by the circumstances of life, the good news isn't bound up by all those things. Now, that's what's really valuable and important, because sometimes we think that that good news is kind of so located with us and what we do that sometimes, well, it gets kind of just pushed out of the way too. But Paul says that while I may be treated like a prisoner, that my anxieties and my circumstances have got me weighed down, that I might be captive to them, and I may not be able to give out that good news, God's message is still getting out there. That good news is still carrying on. And that's what I want to encourage you with today. Listen, I know life can be extremely, exceedingly busy. It can be horribly hectic. And then you throw on things you're not expecting. And we need to remember that, listen, God hasn't failed to show up. We just need to figure out how do we keep it in mind? How do we keep Jesus in mind? Well, I don't really come offering some really horribly profound system that says if you just do this, this, and this, it really just is a matter of practice, discipline. Paul really doesn't tell Timothy, like, here's the secret. He gives him a couple things. Remind and be diligent. Boy, that solves it, doesn't it? Well, that's easy. I mean, we're already talking about remembering, aren't we? Well, what he's saying is He says, remind them. So here's how that works in community and fellowship in the church and among Christians. We remind each other who ought to be our guiding guide, model, force, illustration, relationship. Now, what that means is we have to give permission for somebody to do that, because you know that the last thing you like when you're facing all that anxiety is someone to tell you, well, if you just pay attention to Jesus. I mean, I can tell you by that experience that you're lucky you don't get smacked. Because we consider it so simplistic it's got to be more complicated than that. But Paul really tells Timothy, just remind them these things. Remind them about Jesus. And so how do we do that? Well, let me just suggest that, number one, if you're a parent, that one of the things you keep busy doing is looking at those occasions and opportunities, not where you can become, don't create the environment where your kids think you're just pontificating all the time, like you're the great sage. You're the great Swami of all things. You with me? Now just kind of maybe take those moments and just sit down and have a conversation, real, one-to-one, where like with your kids, and say, you know what? I know that you've been out on the playground and you've noticed that young girl and nobody's playing with her. And you've come home and you've told me you're pretty worried about that it doesn't seem like she has any friends. And you're over and you're really playing with all of your friends and you just, it catches your attention from time to time. You sit in and you say, why don't you go be her friend? And then tell them, you know what, there's these great stories about this young, short guy who nobody liked and nobody wanted to be his friend. And Jesus went to be his friend. In fact, he said, let's go have dinner at your house. And you tell them that little story about Zacchaeus. Hey, those are excluded, those aren't being included. Or, hey, you see that bully thing going on, you know? I know nobody believes that happens, but just go watch on the playground. Actually, watch in the workplace. Watch adults do it. They know how really well. How do you think the children learn how to bully? They watch adults. That's the answer, adults. What do? Well, we sit down and we have a conversation. We say, you know what? I might have been in that. That might have been me. Any of you ever bullied when you were younger? That you'd be willing to say you were? Listen, I understand the privacy matters here. But this is family here. You're going to tell me one person remembers being bullied as a kid? Well, okay, still statistically deniable. Margin of error, plus or 3%. Too bad. So sad, you who were bullied. If you had been, God bless you. But the nature of human beings are to find someone in a pecking order, and you just watch it. The bullied become the bully. It just happens. You will find someone to bully. So have a conversation about that. Remind them, hey, listen, Jesus was bullied. Now let's talk about how he responded. You don't think Jesus was bullied? Listen, Jesus was bullied. And it's not a stretch of the definition. He was pursued and he was sought after. The religious leaders did not like what he had to say. They didn't like anything about what he was offering. And they were, at every turn, he couldn't have a meal with someone asking, how come you don't wash your hands? Now listen, that's just ridiculous. If you don't wash your hands, you want to go to, you want to get some infection? That's all on you. But listen, bullying is ridiculous. So let's have a conversation. Oh, that's right. What about that one where you find out that child who came to school and their family moved from somewhere in the Middle East, probably a refugee family, maybe taken in by a local church, maybe they've got that look. See the front page of the paper? I only have time to look at the front page most of the time on Sunday mornings. Story. Living as a Muslim in the Sooner State. I can't wait to read the article. But I can tell you that there are probably all kinds of things that will be alarming in that. So a child comes to that class, and immediately all of your and my prejudices related to terrorist activities are foisted off onto a young child, 6, 7, 8 years old. And immediately we find an outlet for our aggression and our anger for things that happen, and we perceive that because of their particular ethnicity, it's all their fault. Time to have a conversation. Time to have a conversation about when Jesus was confronted by someone who wasn't his ethnicity, and she actually said something pretty challenging. Almost, I mean, some read it, you can read it differently, but some read it that she actually helped Jesus see that he was being a little bit tribal. He should expand his horizons. So when the woman asked for something from Jesus and he said, I didn't come for you, I came for these folks. And she said, well, even the dogs like the crumbs from the table. It was like, oh, wait a minute. And we read that and go, ooh, I think she said something to Jesus. Well, yeah. So sometimes we need to say something to each other when those ethnic things happen. When we see that, we need to talk to our children. Don't wait till they come to you. Talk about that. When you hear about it, talk to them about that. You see, this is why Jesus isn't on our minds. Because we let other things inform how we're going to make those decisions. And because keeping Jesus' mind is so low because of everything else is going on, when our children do come to us and ask us what to do, stay away from them. Don't bother them. Be nice. We've not talked about what relationship looks like and how to value a person. That's why, frankly, we face some of the struggles we face in getting over things that we feel like we should have been over for decades, if not centuries. Because we need to learn to encourage each other to keep Jesus in mind. It's pretty simple, but it's pretty profound. But we need the permission to do it with each other. Paul says to Timothy, remind them. So one of my roles is to say, let's remember Jesus. One of your roles to me is to say, Pastor, let's remember Jesus. Remember, I just said I'm not above those same pressures and those same obstacles and those same things that get in the way. But we need permission to remind each other. Keep Jesus up here so that when it comes time to make have a decisional moment, you're thinking about, okay, how did Jesus live this out? And this said, be diligent. I mean, you know, he talked about endurance and diligence. My old basketball coach, my freshman basketball coach, Willie Kelly, would say, you need some intestinal fortitude. I had to go look it up. What freshman in high school knows what intestinal fortitude is? Well, I didn't at the time, but now we figured it out. You need to be diligent and have some endurance about you. Littleton, as he made fun of me for not being able to shoot a basketball or taking a charge properly or things like that, you know. He said, that's what you need. And that's what he's saying to Timothy. Timothy, don't be timid about it. It's not go out there and take someone's head off about it, but you be diligent about it. It's not so that you come off so pious and overly spiritual that someone's just put off by you, but no, just remind each other of Jesus. And be diligent about it. Endure that. Be persistent about it. Keep Jesus in mind. Two quick reasons. Number one, because Jesus is risen. So he refers to the resurrection and its results. Paul is not arguing about the fact of the resurrection. He's arguing for the results of the resurrection. And the results of the resurrection mean that Timothy has what he needs to declare the good news because the good news isn't bound by the experiences of difficulty and suffering. Resurrection, the results are that Paul can say while in prison, listen, that good news is still good news. That good news is still good news because I'm not always going to be in prison. Not always going to be held captive. It's good news. So Paul had perspective because of the resurrection. And he said, descended from David. And some writers take this variously, but really it's a reference to his humanity. Jesus is a real person. He's a real person. He endured real things, real person. You can too. You can too. The other way to take it is Jesus is a fulfillment of promise. God had been promising to do something about the captivity of human beings for a long time, and he took care of it in Jesus. That's worth an amen. Yeah. You see, because when you and I think captivity, we are so influenced by a world where people are taken hostage. And it's in another country, on another continent. But what we forget is people are bound and captive every day by something. You know, when we were talking about talking with your children, you may have been a child not talked to by your parents. You may have grown up socialized in a particular way, and now you've found that Jesus wants to set you free from some of those sorts of things. That you don't have to look at yourself as wholly captive to those people who told you you couldn't do, you would never be, you'll never amount to. Folks, that's captivity. That's being captive. Or it's growing up not helping people understand that differences in people are good. And we get captive to thinking that, well, only people are good are just like me. So long as you're hanging out in all the right places with all the right people. And the unintended consequence of that is to say that, well, some people just can't be, they're no good. And I just have to tell you, if we're going to remember Jesus, Jesus crossed every one of those boundaries to everyone who ever thought someone was no good. With me? We talked about it in our class this morning. I had a little fun in another class today. I found the Fountain of Youth. Teach Sunday school class to a bunch of kids in their 20s. Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, I know someone's just a little bit older than that, but I'm not calling attention to him. Actually, a couple of you. Oh, so how about 20s and 30s so I don't offend anybody? How's that? It's the Fountain of Youth. And I enjoyed it this morning. But we started talking about all the ways that we forget people are captive. They're captive because of their gender, their ethnicity, their social location, their health, their ethnicity. Every one of those instances, Jesus crossed those boundaries. Every one of them. And listen, if we're not reminding each other of that, we won't cross them either. And our children won't cross them either. And their children won't cross them either. Got to keep Jesus in mind. So if you're having trouble, I'm not terribly schooled on tattoos, but if you need to, go get them. If you need a memento so you don't forget every 15 minutes that Jesus ought to be first, find some way to keep it in mind. Find some way. And if we do, then we will talk about a group of people who can get together and lay claim to a different vision for God's kingdom and the world. So we won't have a lot of anxiety of who sits in the White House. And we won't feel that we have to draw some... I better leave that alone. I'll just leave it at that. You'll think I'm meddling. What do they say? Preacher, you quit preaching, gone to meddling. So we'll just quit meddling. But remember that when it comes time to make a decision, if Jesus is on the forefront of your mind, some of those decisions will be a whole lot easier than you think they are. Some of those decisions will be a whole lot easier than you think they are. Because there's some decisions that will arise above the level that we plant them in. How was that for meddling without meddling? Okay, so here we go. Let's keep Jesus in mind, right? Bookends. Let's keep Jesus in mind.